Payne, and thank you for indulging us being a few minutes late. Comptroller should be here shortly. I just wanted to make two quick statements. One, on behalf of the state, our condolences and support go out to the people of Belgium from that attack that occurred yesterday. It reminds us of the times and the challenges that we have going forward, but, you know, our heart and full support go to the people and those who are trying to keep us all safe. Secondly, I want to mention the governor's not here because a very good friend of his mother had passed, and he's attending that funeral today. With that, Madam President.
No, I just join you in your words, Governor, about the perilous times we live in, and our sympathies with the families in Belgium and around, and the appreciation that I have and we all have on behalf of our families for those here who very quietly and with amazing success thus far have kept us out of greater harm.
Right.
It is one world. You know.
Really is, and it's a small world. So, with that said, Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer. We have 10 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are 7 reports of emergency submissions. We are prepared for questions you may have.
I have a question on item number one. No, not item. Number 7, Stadium Authority?
Yes, I did see Mr. Ferguson's, yes.
Oh, there he is.
And this is the one of the projects for the Baltimore City Public Schools. Specifically, it's the Fort Worthington K-8 School. Mr. Friends, Mr. McWiggin are here from the Stadium Authority.
Good morning.
Tell me a little bit about I know this is part of the $1 billion project for Baltimore City School construction. Can you give me a little bit more on Fort Worthington?
Sure. The importance of this, I would say, is bid package number 2, is that in December of 2015, this board approved bid package number 1, which was for demolition and site work. This group of packages will allow actual construction to begin and something to actually be built. And this is the first school in the program. This is a complete replacement school.
How do you determine your MBE goals? I see it's a 32%, and then you have sub-goals.
Well, our goal originally is the state goal, and then it's Gary's here to illuminate the answer. My understanding is that it's based on the group of packages available and estimates on a goal that can reasonably be attained. Yeah. Gary, do you have anything?
Good morning, Gary McGuigan, the State Authority. We have a procurement review group that reviews all our contracts, and when we met with the first school, we felt we could achieve 32%. Given the fact that when we move through the program, we think that the MBEs will be a little more strapped and it may be more difficult, the ultimate goal is to get to 29% for the program.
Okay, and the sub-goals are not a ceiling, are they?
No, they're not a ceiling.
I guess that was a leading question. So, okay. Well, thank you very much, Madam Treasurer. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I'm just curious, Gary, the funding. We're all set to roll with all the funding now, are we?
We received the 2014 City CAFA on Friday, and we expect to issue bonds the third week in April.
Yes. That's very exciting. Good. Great. Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know what? Now, while you're up here, I'm sorry. I found this. No, it's completely different. On the, you are managing the governor's core project, the demolition projects. The first block, I think, it was Stricker Street. Has that been completely cleared at this point? Do you know offhand?
That is being done by the city. I think one side of the block has been performed. Right now we're meeting with DHCD and the city. We're doing due diligence and procurements for the money that's involved in the core program.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're conducting analysis on protocols for lead dust and workforce development. So we anticipate the first demolition under the CORE program to happen this summer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm just getting started.
Could I just ask a quick question about number four?
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
That is the Department of Housing and Community Development. And this is the $2 million of general obligation bond proceeds that's being lent to review.
Right. Looks like a fine project. My question is, what is the area median income? This is set at 60% of area, and I just am curious what the area means.
I understand. Ellington Churchill, Deputy Secretary for Housing and Community Development. I would request that I bring up Brian Olson, Deputy Director for Multifamily Housing, and can better define the area, 60% of area.
Great. And since you're doing that, also just what the area is. What the area median income is. Somebody could tell me what the area is.
Brian?
It's not immediate pressing need. I'm just curious.
So the area is set by the Census Bureau, and HUD is the statistical median. It's the statistical metropolitan area for Frederick.
Okay, so it's Frederick City, some of Frederick County.
And environs, yeah.
Can you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, I'm Brian O'Toole, Rental Lending, EHCD.
And what do you know what the median income is?
Off the top of my head, no. We will certainly get that to you, though.
I'm just curious how much variation there is in that.
Across the state?
Well, I'm interested across the state, but in this area you've got Frederick City and then some relatively rural environs, and how that fits.
We will get back to you very shortly with that information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this the Secretary's agenda?
Yes, it is.
What item is this?
Four.
Okay. All right. Questions on a couple of other items.
Okay. Thank you. And I had just asked about item seven, which is the state authority for all state schools. Okay. Do you have any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Yes, I do. On item A5.
It is an emergency report, so I believe that is public safety. Mr. Stewart is there to explain the report at the Maryland at the Metropolitan Transition Center. Dietary equipment was installed there.
Mr. Conkroll, do you have a question? Or
yes, I do. Unless you want to say something.
No, I think the emergency is straightforward from where we were.
Can you introduce yourself?
I'm sorry. Bill Stewart, Deputy Secretary of Administration.
Okay. So as you noted, it's an emergency contract award to a Baltimore-based company, Carey Sales and Service, for the delivery and installation of kitchen equipment at correctional facilities in Baltimore City. This stems from that contract we awarded last year, right before Governor Hogan took office, frankly, to a firm called Crystal Enterprises out of Glendale. It was, I think in hindsight, one of the worst contracts this board has ever approved. And I'll always wonder whether it was simply a question of staggeringly bad judgment on your part and the other folks in your agency, or whether it was something else. But here's the 10-second summary. The board accepts the department's recommendation to take this major food service contract away from the incumbent vendor and give it to this untested firm that came in with a ridiculously low bid. About a month into the contract term, the new vendor, Crystal, came to you, the department, and served notice that it didn't have enough money to carry out the existing contract, and that absent a huge infusion of additional cash in an emergency contract, it was going to walk off the job and thus open the question of how thousands of inmates were going to get fed. So, with the gun pointed at our head, figuratively, of course, you all move forward because we didn't want to have riots in the Baltimore City correction system. So with that as the background, I was interested to find out that since the emergency contract with Crystal Enterprises expired at the end of last August, you, the department, have been delivering the food services in question in-house, and you need the equipment referenced in this item to carry out the responsibilities. So I guess the question is, how have you managed to pull this off?
Well, it's been a lot of work going forward. As you mentioned, the contract was awarded to Crystal prior to the administration taking office. Within a month, we did have to come back because the RFP was flawed on which Crystal bid, and that's why we came back. We got an emergency contract through August 31st, I believe. In that interim, then we sent out an RFP for a new contract. Bids were due in July. We got no bids that were susceptible of award at that time. Fortunately, we had started to plan for the possibility that we may have to take over sometime in June. Frankly, I wish we'd started in April, but we started in June. So we were ready to move forward on August 31st. So we did, and then in the interim, of course, the governor closed the men's detention center, which took away one of our kitchens. So we moved everything into the Metropolitan Transition Center kitchen. We've been trying. We eventually hired approximately 90 contractual employees. 50% of those were new hires. 50% were from Crystal. We've continued to try to upgrade the staff as we've moved forward. We've probably lost about 20 through resignations and terminations, but we've added another 20. We're doing cross-training with other facilities in the area. We have a work group that originally had a call every week. We're down to every 3 weeks now because we're getting a handle on the situation. We're very optimistic within the next 3 or 4 weeks we can start converting some of those contractual employees to PINs and send them out to PCT for their six-week CO training, because they'll become CDOs with PINs. But that's going to take a process, because we can't, probably about 8 to 10 at a time from various levels to go out there.
Yeah, and so, just let me make it very clear. Yeah. I've got the lieutenant governor sitting here and the treasurer. This was under a previous administration that this unbelievable situation occurred. And so I just want to, I guess, explore the fact that I happen to think it's quite an accomplishment that you were able to move in, I guess, step into the breach, so to speak, and handle this situation. And I guess relative to what the state was paying Crystal under the terms of the emergency contract and what we were paying the previous incumbent back in 2014, have you managed to look at the cost-effective management that you're doing right now and compare your cost now to Crystal and then the previous incumbent?
No, sir, we have not been able to do that. We're trying to keep the food service operating, as you know, to keep feeding the inmates. I said we've had turnover in this dietary contractuals. That's a process that we will get to, but we have not done that yet.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious about it. It may redound very nicely to your benefit and to the taxpayers' benefit if you're able to do it.
I hope so, but we're just trying to keep the place operating right now.
Okay, I understand. And the timeline for putting the contract back out to bid?
We're not going to do that. We don't plan to do that right now.
So the department's going to continue to run the kitchen?
Just like we do all our other facilities, yes, sir.
So that makes it even more interesting to me as to what the actual costs are. And around the state, how many corrections facilities rely upon third-party private vendors for food services? How many are state-run?
I believe all of them are.
All of them are?
All of ours. Run by
are
state,
in-house?
By the state, yes, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Sorry that you got paired in with what I consider to be a you know, highly irregular situation that preceded you.
Thank you.
But I would be interested in any kind of analysis, and please share it with Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer as to what the comparison is as far as the taxpayers' costs.
We'll do that. Yes, sir.
I thank you, but the comptroller raises a very interesting question, I think, that has been raised from time to time about the comparison of providing services, particularly human services, in-house rather than contracting out. And I think a study of, you know, trying to bring in all of the factors that one would want to would be a very interesting thing to do. We did this years ago with social services in Western Maryland with one of the counties, and it turned out that it was more effective in some places to contract out and in some places to do it in-house, not on a ideological basis, really. And this sounds like another very interesting.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let us know.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Great. And I apologize for being tardy. When I went to school, I always got one or two excused tardiness. But I missed out on item 7, did you say?
If yes.
I could possibly return to that.
Mr. Prince is still here.
He's still here. Okay. Yes.
Good.
Your item was still pending and they remain.
Thank you. Yeah, don't worry about that.
Good morning again.
Okay, so I'm sorry if I'm going over ground that's already been plowed, but the my understanding is you're awarding a package 2 of 2 to Gilbane Building Company for construction of the Fort Worthington Elementary School. The total cost of the bid package is, am I right, $31,428,316?
Right, for bid package number 2.
And perhaps this was asked before, but what is the per square foot anticipated school construction cost?
How much was that?
$320 a square foot.
And does that include a site acquisition cost?
I think the school's already owned the site.
It does not include the acquisition, but it includes the site improvements cost.
So it's $320. Okay. How does that compare to what was paid last year for school construction per square foot cost?
The IAC reported in their budget hearing this year that they expect the average cost to be $336 for new construction for this year.
Okay, and what was it last year?
I think it was substantially less than that.
And what is the impediment to you guys, who we have on a pedestal? I mean, the Maryland Stadium Authority is, bar none, the go-to agency for building buildings efficiently and, you know, high quality and on budget. So what is it that we're missing here that you guys are not helping us with? I guess it would be
the
rhetorical question. And I don't know. This is a serious question, because otherwise we just sit here and the costs go up and up and nobody ever seems to be able to figure out an alternative.
I would ask that you give us a chance. I think the difference here is that these schools in the beginning of the program started the program 3 years ago. They've been in design for 18 months. We've really been working in earnest on reducing costs. I think we're going to see the benefit of those activities later on in the year one schools and definitely in the year two schools. We've changed the way we've been looking at how to build schools. City Schools has been a good partner, and I guess I would ask that you give us an opportunity to show as we progress the efficiencies that we can create.
Great, and I'm sorry if I seem a little amped up here, but it's not you guys I'm concerned about, but I happened, Lieutenant Governor and Treasurer, to receive what is only can only be described as a bizarre letter recently, signed by Dr. Teresa Albin, Superintendent of the Frederick County Public Schools. Odd doesn't even begin to describe this letter. It's addressed to the Speaker and the Senate President.
which is odd in and of itself. Now, I'll explain my reasons for that.
Not the theory. So it expresses this letter, and bear with me, I'm sorry you have to be standing there, but it expresses frustration with the process by which the school systems come before the Board of Public Works each year to request additional funds for school construction projects. Apparently, Lieutenant Governor, as you are obviously you entitled to weigh in here, it seems that you and Governor Hogan and I spend too much time asking about topics they, the superintendents, find inconvenient, and that they would rather not discuss those issues in a public setting.
Is that what that letter says?
Yes, it does actually spare Treasurer Kopp, who's speaking up, perhaps this is why it spared her, but who, according to the letter, is the only member of this board who knows what she's doing. The only part of this ridiculous letter that I actually agreed with was when they were saying, frankly, Madam Treasurer, nice things about you. To save themselves, the superintendents, from the indignity, apparently, of having to ask for millions of dollars of taxpayer money and to be subjected to actual questions about the performance of their school systems on issues such as school maintenance, they would like the Board of Public Works to be taken out of the appeals process altogether. And in its place, according to the letter, they would like a system where they can simply mail in their appeals to the IAC. Boy, I'd love to be able to submit my budget requests in writing each year to Chairman Casemeyer and Chairman McIntosh and skip those just really irritating, sometimes, budget hearings that can get tough in questions. But that's not how it works. And it, frankly, it's not how it should work. I actually went back and took a look at the transcripts from the meeting of the last school construction appeals. I have excerpts of the transcripts here, where we supposedly ran amok, according to the letter. So it looks to me like the vast majority of the presentations were brief, subject-specific, and amiable. I have copies of the one from Frederick County, for instance, and from a few other counties. Frederick County superintendent sent this letter on behalf of her other superintendents. I have copies of the one from Frederick County. Interestingly enough, Superintendent Albin, who signed this letter, she wasn't even at the meeting. I mean, I swear, I can't make this up. She wrote a letter. I cannot make this up. There were some moments when pointed questions were asked, like when we got into the issue of mold in the Howard County school system or unacceptable learning conditions in schools in Baltimore County and Baltimore City or the relocation of students in Carroll County. And that's a good thing. That's called transparency. That's called accountability. That's called checks and balances. Might be inconvenient for the education bureaucrats, but this forum is a darn good thing for the teachers and the students and the taxpayers who deserve to know how their tax dollars are being spent and deserve to have their voices heard. Anyway, it is one of the longer work days for this board. I hope that nobody gives any serious thought to the notion of doing away with the IAC appeals and allowing this whole thing to be done in privacy. Privacy. Anybody ever attended a meeting, the IAC?
They are open meetings.
Oh, yeah, sure. But here's the thing. Nobody goes. And nobody knows where it is. It's, in effect, a little-known private agency. And I'm sure that the education bureaucrats would love to have a setting where they could just mail in their concerns and, you know, but hey, that's not in the best interest of the taxpayers. And it's not in the best interest of the kids. And it runs counter to everything we talk about as far as greater transparency and accountability. And the questions we ask you and the Stadium Authority are exactly the kinds of questions that need to be asked in public. Lieutenant Governor, I apologize for going
I apologize.
But I'm happy to provide copies of both letters. Well, we sent a letter back. It's 4 pages long. So I won't bore you with it, but it is entertaining, I promise you.
Well, I will clarify my comment about it being odd. I thought that a critique of the Board of Public Works process probably should have been mailed to the board with potential copies to the presiding officers. I thought it was a bit odd, given that this has been a process, the appeal before the board. You gentlemen can sit down. Thank you. It's been, you know, this process has been going on for many, many years in terms of coming before the board to make their appeals. And it is a little disconcerting in terms of the letter, and then the tone of the letter I thought was a little odd, if I could say. So I agree with the comptroller in terms of transparency, but he knows that I'm a fan of the Board of Public Works, as are everyone that happened to be here, fans of the board.
Aren't you?
Yes, right. I noticed Dewitt clapped, so.
Governor, could I just say this, that I do think at times, I believe what this letter is concerned about is, on our calendar, on the published agenda, were the issues of school construction, and at times, because we have people before us, we do get into other issues dealing with the schools and education, but not school construction, and people had some concern about that, and sometimes the comptroller will have to admit he asks questions in a heated voice because he cares a lot about what the answers are in the situation is. We have discussed from year to year about different ways of doing the public school construction hearing. You will recall when you were secretary, it used to be much longer than it is now. But I too agree that the Board of Public Works has a very significant role to play, that each of us has roles to play. I get troubled when it seems to me that some of us are playing the roles that others should be playing in that whole process. But I would say that I agree with you that if there are concerns about the process, it seems to me that a letter should be addressed to the board and to the board members and maybe even sitting down and talking.
Madam Chair, I also found it odd from an arithmetic standpoint. I personally found the letter to be insulting to me personally. And I won't speak for the governor or the lieutenant governor, but why would you insult 2 out of the 3 votes on the Board of Public Works?
Because your hope is that you will be dealing only with the IAC. And
right. So,
anyway, thank you.
Very good. I agree with both of you, and sometimes we do get a little passionate, I guess, about our comments on different items that come up. And I had on one occasion, I'll share this, where I received an email saying that I was rude to someone at the Board of Public Works. And they included their telephone number, so I called the woman, and she was surprised that I was on the other end of the phone. And I told her, you know, you're absolutely right. I was rude. And I apologized to her, and I said, this is why. I knew what was going on. I knew the direction they were going, but I could have allowed that person to speak a little longer. And she didn't drop the phone, but she was a little shocked, and she said it changed her opinion of me. And I said, well, thank you, and I graciously hung up the phone. Sometimes we do get a little testy, I guess, but it's because we believe in what we're doing. Is there anything else on the Secretary's agenda? Thank you. Do we have a motion?
Approve.
Second?
Move approve.
Second. All in favor? Thank you. I think we move on to Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources.
And you want to hold just a second while some of the people clear the room.
Doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Second, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
On the what?
On your letter.
Your letter.
Oh, yeah. No, everyone was CC'd on my letter. Here are the transcripts that were such a problem from that meeting. I'm going to pass it on down to the treasurer.
But, no, no.
No, everyone will get a copy of the letter. Yep, everyone will get a copy of it. Thank you.
Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 8 items this morning on our Department of Natural Resources real property agenda for your approval.
Any?
Move approval.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I have.
Yes, you've got
yeah. Item 8A, Program Open Space, Garrett County.
Yes, sir.
Second sentence in the property line, a certificate of reservation from the Wood Commissioner of Land Patents.
Governor, I'm going to step in right now and take the blame for Secretary Belton. This was an item that we worked on twice, and you're right, there is a grammatical error in that.
There's a typo.
For the record, okay. But I just wanted you to address it here and as Secretary Belton. I don't think you can follow up with that scrivener there. Certificate of reservation from the commissioner would allow, the wood needs to come out. The wood, W-O-O-D, will come out from the Commissioner of Land Patents. I should have brought that.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. So if you go to remedial class.
I think it's such an interesting section of the law that that's what I get carried away there with there, that there's a piece of land that nobody owns. Commissioner of Land Patents is going to probably reserve it for the Department of Natural Resources.
Interesting. So that meant we could have just claimed it. Yeah, someone could have just gone and made a claim.
I think this is the ones where they haven't paid taxes in 20 years. And so because they haven't paid taxes, they're working on the record. But because they haven't paid taxes, DNR is allowed to come and reserve it. There's the other kind that DNR also comes to the board for, or anyone can come in. If they found a completely unknown piece of land, they can come in and claim it through the archive, Commissioner of Land Patents.
Okay.
So again,
and you would have had to pay
taxes. Like 45 works jurisdiction right there.
And you would have had to pay taxes on that property for a period of time.
Are there a lot? Is there a lot of property
that's
just unclaimed by anybody?
DNR comes about once every 5-10 years.
Well, the last time this happened was 2014.
Years ago, last
one. That's not long ago.
But in this particular section of the law, the land has to be contiguous to property DNR already owns, and that is the case in this instance.
Okay.
So
we had
a great
in the last 5 years.
They discovered it and claimed it for the Boy Scouts. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Okay. Do we have a motion?
So move approval.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Thank you very much.
Super.
Department of Budget and Management.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, David Brinkley, Secretary of Budget and Management. We have 6 items on the agenda, and I have people here to address any concerns or questions that you might have.
There were a couple of items that just had single bids, or one with a single bid, 2S, but I understand that this typically, there are not a lot of vendors who can handle this needed program. I did have the opportunity to go to Chase Brixton maybe 2 weeks ago, and they have a wonderful program. They're located in the old Monumental Building in downtown Baltimore, and they were there because they recently received an award from the federal government for their substance abuse program. I'll just bring that up. And they have long been involved in providing treatment for HIV and AIDS patients during a time when people were very fearful of what was going on in the AIDS community. I think many of us remember that time when no one knew what AIDS was and were very afraid to even come in contact with anyone, and they were one of the few places that were willing to provide services for them. So I don't have any other questions.
Move approval.
Have a second? We're all in favor, so thank you. moving along. University system. Didn't even have to look up.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have three items on the agenda. In attendance today, we have Dr. Kim Schatzel, the president of Towson University.
Yeah.
Here to answer any questions.
Well,
you said the president of Towson is here.
Yes, sir.
This could come up.
It would be an honor to see the president of Towson University. Congratulate her.
The Towson University.
Good morning. It's indeed my pleasure to be here this morning. I've started January 28th. So I've been here for about 8 weeks, and I've received a tremendous amount of support, and we want to thank you and the board for the consideration of this important project for the campus to maintain the academic excellence, as well as the impact that we have on the state and its citizenry. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I apologize for not being at your ceremony on Monday. Party on Monday. I could not make it, but it is good to see you and welcome.
Thank you very much. Look forward to getting to know you all much, much better.
Can I ask a question while you're up there?
Certainly can.
Madam President, welcome. So this contract is for $153,300, and it's to do pre-construction construction manager at risk services. The estimated cost of the project, which I take it is to renovate a 13-story residence facility, is this like a dormitory?
That's a residence hall, correct.
Okay, so it's a dormitory. We're going to spend $32 million $560,000 estimated cost. Is that public debt or public money?
It's going to be coming out of the auxiliaries from the system itself, from
it's
a revenue bond.
It's going to be
bond.
Coming out from where?
From a revenue bond. But I'll turn to my folks in the back and give the specific answer.
Yeah. I'm interested as to where the dollars are coming from.
Those are academic revenue bonds.
Okay. Let me ask this, though. Why are we using academic revenue bonds or anything associated with the public? Why aren't we just asking
the...
It's auxiliary.
I don't think it is
revenue
academic.
Excuse me, Joe Austin, Vice President for Administration and Finance. This is
system closer funded, to the microphone.
Yes, system-funded construction program. It's auxiliary bonds through the University System of Maryland. So it's money that the system borrows, and then through student fees and residential fees, those bonds are paid back over 20 years.
Okay, so it's a form of public debt.
Yes.
Okay, I understand that. That's what I was driving at, because my question is, why aren't we using the private sector debt that is readily available in this space for dormitories at University of Maryland system membership? Why are we using the public debt when we could use the private debt? And based on, I think, previous experiences at College Park and other campuses.
This is a pre-existing owned building by the university and by the state, and therefore we're using the auxiliary bond program to pay for that. When we look at each of these programs, we analyze which is the more efficient way of managing these projects, whether it's better done as a P3 using private equity, or whether better done using our own reserves and through the system-funded program.
Okay, that's a fair question, a fair response. Where's the analysis?
I don't have that with me. I know we did that long ago. Our last couple of projects that we've done on campus, we have actually done using the system-funded program, because the interest rates that the private sector was able to get was higher than the interest rates that we were able to get through the system. And the long-term board rates for our students were more affordable by going through the system-funded program rather than going through the private equity program.
What about if the private sector could do it for two-thirds the cost?
If the private sector can do it for two-thirds of the cost, we've done that in the past. We have three buildings on our campus that have been done that way.
Yeah, but what about here? Why are we not exploring that? I mean, I'm not a construction person. The lieutenant governor's infinitely more experienced than I am in this field, but why don't we change our perspective? Dormitory renovations, which are not rocket science, these are not academic buildings that need to be balanced on the head of a needle because of some kind of, you know, lab space that's being used. These are just dormitories, and So this was up before some time ago, and it got withdrawn, I understand, and now we have a new contractor. My question is, Well, two questions. Number one, why aren't we using private debt? And number two, how do we know that this figure of $32,560,000 has any relationship to reality? Or whether it's just, hey, we're spending someone else's money, so who cares? Do you think the construction company cares? Of course they don't. Do you think it's the university cares? Apparently, it's, you know, just these bonds are just an ATM machine we can go to. So the question is, who's looking out for the taxpayer?
Actually, our designers and our architects on campus working with our designer of the facility look at that very, very closely. We use guidelines that DBM gives us for construction renovation of residence halls, and we try to stay within those parameters.
That doesn't sound very tight to me.
Well, when we get ready to go out to bid, this will be bid through a CM at risk, and all of the contractors will be able to look at all of their bids. It's an open book process, so we will actually see the bids that come back from each and every contractor.
I'll defer to the other members of the board, but frankly, when you say, look, this is the most you can spend, $32 million or $23 million, whatever it is. I mean, where does that figure come from? Is that from your designers? And who are they paid by and hired by, and who are they responsive to? They're certainly not responsive to the taxpayers. They're responsive to you guys. It's just a maybe I got out of bed on the wrong side this morning, but Lieutenant Governor, I'll defer to you because it's really your specialty.
Well, I think you give me a lot more credit than I deserved on that, but it probably would be a good exercise for a lot of us to go back and look at projects. I know when I was at DTS, we estimated, you know, the cost of the project. We had in-house estimators and designers similar to what they're talking about. But I don't think we often went back and looked at our original estimate and compared it to when the project was completed. Now, we didn't do a lot of the CM at risk projects, which you know tries to put a lot more responsibility on the contractor, but sometimes it's worth as an internal exercise just seeing how correct we were in our preliminary estimates. And things happen. The Chinese economy gets particularly hot, and all the steel goes and concrete goes there. So those are things that sometimes happen, but it still would be worth doing that, and I don't know, and maybe that's something that we could take a look at. I'm not sure as the board, but maybe something that I can assign to Mark or somebody. Let me think about that.
Also, Lieutenant Governor, thank you, but also the analysis, such as it is, because if the private sector can use private money to do the same job for two-thirds of the cost, which they have done at College Park, before everybody changed their mind about availability of public debt. Give us the analysis. And Ms., the system person, is he behind you? Yeah. What is the system's position? Why don't you take these very run-of-the-mill projects, dormitory renovation, and use private debt? And pay them with the revenues from the students who are living in the dormitories.
I would have to go back to the system itself and pose that question to them. I mean, I am representing the system, but I'm actually from one of the campuses. But I will certainly go back and pose that to the system because it has come up before. You have asked that question before.
And the private developers tell me we're getting taken to the cleaners here and that we're spending 30 to 35% more than we should for these dormitory renovations, and we're using public debt. So that's the issue. Might take a look at it.
Is it possible to get the analysis that was done a year ago? If you could send it to the board, I think that would be helpful for us.
Okay. Just, we've been using a lot of terms, just so I understand. This is when students come and they use dining halls or dormitories, they pay a fee, right? Those are auxiliary enterprises,
correct,
right? That is what's backing. It's not taxes and it's not tuition,
correct?
Right? Those would be academic revenue bonds or general obligation building bonds.
That is correct.
Okay, I just want, because there was a little confusion.
The University System of Maryland has the system-funded construction program, which funds those things that the state does not pay for using state revenue bonds.
Right.
So it covers things such as dining facilities, parking structures, university unions, and housing.
Okay. And you can show us that using the auxiliary bond route, what the comptroller is asking, auxiliary bond route is less expensive.
It's more efficient for us to use that process than to go to, and we have been talking to Medco as an example
right.
about future projects.
Right.
We would fund them through Medco and in essence, you know, transfer the ownership of the building to Medco for 20 years while they pay back the bonds that they borrowed in order to do the renovation. So we've been looking at those for future projects with them.
And you also look at public-private
Absolutely.
Partnerships when you borrow at a private rate as opposed to the rate that you can get with your auxiliary bond.
That is correct.
So that would be interesting to see.
Yes.
Thank you. Can I just say also this, Madam President, is before your time, but I do congratulate you, because your predecessor isn't here, that this was a project, as I recall, that went back because there wasn't much competition. You've brought it back. There indeed was competition this time, and I presume got a good rate because of that. So every once in a while we hear a good story.
A lot of good stories. A lot of good stories.
Yes. Often we hear good stories.
Okay. Mr. Evans, this is a separate question completely, and maybe I'm getting way outside my lane, but what would happen if they do this merger of the Baltimore and the – what happens with your job, and who do you then work for if they merge the two universities?
You're talking about Senate Bill 1052?
I don't know bill numbers.
That's the deal. We have procurement at my campus. I'm from the University of Maryland, Baltimore.
Right.
The professional schools. And then you have College Park. So what would happen? I have no idea.
All right.
If I could just ask the president, I apologize. I understand it's your first meeting down here, but I didn't mean to latch into any kind of critical analysis. But
no, we appreciate the questions.
How's the men's baseball team doing?
We've had played a few games, and we're looking forward to having you come to campus, I believe. And one of the things that I understand is that we're going to be able to tour the stadium with you, and I'll be with you for that trip.
Excellent.
So I look forward to do that as well.
Look forward to it.
That's good. Thank you all, unless there are other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Motion on the
move approval.
Second.
We have a second. We're all in favor. Department of Information Technology.
Morning, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. I'm David Garcia, Secretary, Department of IT. Today we have five items on the agenda. Two are supplemental, and we are withdrawing one IT, and we have folks here to answer any questions you may have.
I don't have any questions.
I did have one.
You took the first one off.
In that case.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Favorable.
Okay, second. All in favor? Thank you, Secretary. I think it's largely due to the fact that Deputy Secretary Garcia appreciates being at the Board of Public Works and applauded. So.
That's why we bring him, sir.
Thank you. Department of Transportation.
Good morning, members of the board. For the record, I'm Pete Ron, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT is presenting 19 items today. Items 12M and 16GM are being withdrawn.
12 and 16.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but for a moment, I wanted to welcome the Kent Island High School Championship lacrosse team that is in the back of the room. think we're going to take a photograph, but I don't know where in this room we would do that.
Behind you.
Can they all, can everyone sit behind here? We'll wait till after the meeting. Okay, we're going to, a little bit of time, gentlemen, if you don't mind waiting. Back to the transportation agenda. I see Deputy Secretary Ports knew I was going to be here, so he decided not to.
Before you were interrupted, I think there was a motion to approve.
On that
too, note. Too bad you woke me up. item 19, please.
Well, I was going to start with item 1, and then go to 2, and then, oh, no, let's go to 19. That's fine.
Yes, Mr. Comptroller, and we do have someone here, actually a couple of people here from MTA, involving the settlement of Amtrak over disputed costs. This one, however, is one in which the Amtrak system was not capable of calculating our fee for credit card transactions on the trains when people would utilize this. And so what happened is this is a settlement with them to represent the fees that Amtrak had to pay to credit card companies that are now being transferred back to MTA and MDOT.
Okay, so I didn't quite understand all that, but what I do understand is $792,000 of taxpayers' money is going to be spent in this settlement of the disputed, arrangements between MTA and Amtrak. You say that Amtrak owes us $1.3 million because Amtrak employees were riding our system for free. Amtrak says MTA owes, you guys, owe $1.5 million for fees associated with the sale of marked tickets, bearing in mind that MTA, Amtrak share track space, train stations, platforms, and such. So we're asking for $1.3 million. They're asking for $1.5 million, and we compromise by paying them almost $800,000. How does that work?
Let me bring people who are directly involved in this.
And so it really brings up the larger issue of why are we settling these damn things rather than taking them to court.
Good morning. My name is Eric Holig. I'm the director of Mark Train and Commuter Bus Services. The agreement is also a number of contract modifications that were made to clarify ambiguity in between our 2008 and 2013 contracts. The $792,000 is made up not only of those two items, but other items that were engendered as a result of changes in federal law, the Federal Employees Liability Act. There are a number of additional items that were added in order to properly clarify ambiguities and changes between the two contracts. So this is an aggregate sum of a number of different items.
Okay. So we have to pay $800,000. But what about other regional rail properties, such as VRE, SEPTA, Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority? Are they all subject to this costly legal action in response to federal changes?
Correct, they are. This is part of Amtrak's published tariffs. They are applied to both internal and external customers, so other authorities are subject to the same amounts. Maryland is not being singled out for penalty.
It's actually a press statement. And, I don't know if we can always talk about the or support the veracity of the press, but they claim that Pennsylvania SEPTA is to pay $14 million, New Jersey Transit $28 million. New Jersey Transit $90 million. Massachusetts, $28.8 million. So it's...
That's in regards...
We're only paying $1
million?
That specific article is in regards to the Passenger Rail Investment Act.
Oh, okay.
It is an agreement for shared construction costs and upkeep of the Northeast Corridor. Maryland will be subjected to additional costs as well. Those are upcoming in the future. Maryland currently does not have an agreement with Amtrak to pay items like that.
So this is in addition to the $800,000 that we're paying now.
Yes.
So we'll be paying another $1 million, it sounds like.
It would probably our share for this agreement whenever we end up reaching agreement with Amtrak, because we are still disputing the but-for liability that they impose upon us for the agreement for us to use their tracks. Will probably be in the range of an additional $5 million that we will have to pay for the upkeep of the Northeast Corridor for the use of embarked trains on their system.
Okay. But you're saying today that the 1.3 million that Amtrak employees were obligated to pay us and didn't because they were riding our system for free, that 1.3 million has been paid?
That's correct. Well, that is the result of a study of over years of how much those employees had been using the system without paying.
And that was recognized by Amtrak and they compensated
us? It was recognized by MTA and we approached them for that reimbursement.
And did they pay it?
As part of this agreement, they will pay, yes.
So net-net.
Yeah. Net, we end up paying more money. And then the other issue I have is, why are we settling all these cases? I hope I live long enough to see whoever it is, the Attorney General or you or somebody, come and say, you know what, we're just not going to be held up anymore. We're going to actually litigate something and take our chances. Please, Mr. Secretary. You feel feisty someday, feel free. Go ahead.
We're hoping that those opportunities might be coming.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Other questions on the transportation agenda?
Move approval if there are no other questions.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Department of General Services. The Department of General Services.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, and the Comptroller for the record. I'm Gail Bassett, Secretary of General Services. The Department has 34 items on our agenda, including two supplemental items. We are withdrawing item 21. We'll be glad to answer any questions you may have. However, if I may, Governor, I would like to highlight a few things on our agenda today. Today, we have before you 10 construction and maintenance contracts which total over $91 million. And four of those awards are going to small businesses, totaling $1.3 million. And one award is going to a Maryland minority business as a prime contractor. So up to $91 million, and we are presenting before you today, a little over $30 million is going to Maryland minority business firms.
Thank you very much. Which item was that? That is the prime contract.
Prime contract.
Which item is that? I remember seeing it, but what? I didn't mark it. I don't see. I caught you.
Item one.
Oh, well, that is okay. 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 Maryland Aviation. Right. Well, thank you very much. Sheila will remember this. I'm looking for Paul Giorgio to talk about the capital grant and loan programs, because there are a number of...
When you first called, item one on the secretary's agenda was agriculture cost share, and I was going to say we haven't called them up since we used to call Paul Giorgio with the...
Comptroller William Donald Schaefer did always ask Secretary Rutherford to bring up Mr. Giorgio.
Yeah.
And the agriculture cost share grant. That
and the agriculture cost share. Well, I point this out because there are a number of cost sharing or matching grants that are going to a number of worthwhile programs, including the historic Annapolis for renovation of a project there to... Mm-hmm. The town of North Beach for Bayfront Park and Sculpture Garden in Calvert County, the skate park in Baltimore City, the District Heights Family and Youth Services Bureau. I should have asked for the mayor, Mayor Walls, to be here, because he did talk about that about a year ago. I think he told me about that program. So I just wanted to point out, oh, as well as the Maryland Bio Foundation, which I had an opportunity to meet them at the Healthy Be More Expo this past Saturday and go through what they're doing, particularly in terms of STEM education throughout the state. And there were a couple of young ladies there that I'm going to get them involved with what's called Million Women Mentors. And the intent of that program is a national program to provide mentors for young ladies, girls that are interested in STEM areas. And so that's there were two young ladies who, with science backgrounds who were very interested in participating in that program. So without Paul here.
But we do have Kathy Enzor, who is an excellent manager of the program.
Oh, okay, thank you. You have big shoes to follow.
She was trained by Mr. Giorgio, were you not, many years ago.
Shoes to follow there. Well, thank you for your work. Any other
I could just say to the lacrosse team, I have 1,200 people in my agency. They're fabulous state employees. And when there's a vacancy and people apply for the job, if there are two people at the end who are absolutely equal as far as everything else, if either if one of them either played men's lacrosse or women's lacrosse, I guarantee you I hire the lacrosse player because there's so much grit in your games, and you guys have the work ethic down, and you understand from your sport how tough it is to excel. So my personal congratulations. I happened to play the game growing up, but it's a great game.
Good. I tend to hire wrestlers, but that's different.
Can I raise another slightly less optimistic, less positive question or point, Madam Secretary? I invite you over to our building, the Treasury building, where a tremendous amount of work was done about 2 years ago on the front steps. I don't know, Comptroller, if you've noticed them, on the front steps and the front stoop. All of which has been undone, I think, by Mother Nature. As the custodians of the state insurance trust, I'm always a little nervous when I walk out our front door because I think it's a miracle no one has broken their neck walking down those stairs. I just advise if they did a great – people worked very hard. You wouldn't know it from looking at it. Now, I don't know what can be done, but it's not getting better. The bricks are falling apart. There's spaces between all the stones. The whole landing is becoming quite uneven again. So anyhow, come over. I'll give you a cup of tea and show you.
Madam Secretary, just as a little bit of advice of a former secretary, you should walk around to all the buildings from time to time.
Really.
Don't rely on your people. And just go to the buildings and look at them. Look at the cupolas in the state buildings and ask why, you know, what we can do. And I know it's the budget issues, but definitely, you know, talk to us with regard to budgets. You do at least have one person on the second floor that's interested in the buildings and maintaining them. So let's walk around, take a look at the buildings. And maybe it's the materials that we're using with snow removal that may have an effect on it or whatever the materials that were initially done. But, you know, take a look at that. So, all right. We have a motion on the DGS agenda.
Move approval.
Any second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Thank you. And we'll take a picture. I guess, are we going to move the tables or anything?
I was going to say the chairs.
Move the chairs out.